Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, where we learn life is so much sweeter when you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Living Villa Capelli, everybody. It's Stephen again. I'm going to give you another little intro to our guest because this episode, again, is about another great guest we had here at the Villa. A friend of ours who is staying here, world-famous photographer. But before I give you the intro, I just want to give a shout out and thanks to everybody who has been rating and review us on iTunes. Some of those are, let me see, Thriving Entrepreneur, VP Carter, Health Geeks. Thank you guys. We really, really appreciate that. And I know it helps more people find us. And again, if you guys want to spread the word, anybody you think would enjoy the show, please, you know, spread the word. We do appreciate that a lot. And if you want to follow us in our daily adventures, we are pretty active on Facebook, Instagram, not so much Twitter, but we're getting into Twitter. But you can find us all there under the Villa Capelli mantra. So, you know, you just give the website's address, facebook.com/Villa Capelli. You'll find us, like us, and you can follow our adventures there as well. And please sign up for our newsletter. You can find up sign up on any of the sites. Villa Capelli is the main, villacapelli.com is the main portal. And there's links to the podcast. There's also links to the site if you want to interested in staying here. And from there, you can sign up to our newsletter at all. And we give out, you know, and you send out an email, not a lot. So you're not going to get spammed by any means. And we just, you know, it's a good way to keep up with the current goings on. If we have a new product in stock, if we have a promotion or sale going on, that email list is key for us to get the information out to you guys, because Facebook and those new social media don't always let us communicate to everybody all the time. So please sign up for the newsletter. It's really important if you want to get up the inside scoop on everything. And without further ado, let me give you our intro to our guest. We met him years ago in New York and have stayed remained friends. This is Paul's second visit to the Villa. He is known for his male nudes of sports stars and actors. Those kind of began appearing in the mid-1990s in studio magazines, international photography periodicals, Black and White, Sport, and Blue. He also had his work with the Olympians were featured in the books The Sydney Dream, The Athens Dream, and Sport Book. And then Paul started self-publishing. He's done his famous and bestsellers, the Bondi series, Bondi Classic, Bondi Urban. He's also done an Outback series and also a Heroic series. And he has made his mark in fashion and advertising as well, with international awards to his names from a Cannes Lion to Clio's. And he's just a great guy. And if you guys are interested, I know I mentioned this episode, but go to the show notes, which will be livingvillacapelli.com/14. And we'll have links to all of his books there, so you can click through. I would highly recommend them. They're beautiful. They make an amazing gift. They make an amazing gift for yourself on your coffee table. So I have links to all that information in the show notes. So without further ado, please enjoy this interview we had with Mr. Paul Freeman. Hello.
Hi. Isn't that the cutest promo ever?
Not promo, intro.
Intro, whatever.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was much more professional than I expected.
Exactly. We surprised you. We're totally
less,
not professional.
Less rustic than I expected.
As anybody who's listening to this podcast know, we are not professional. So right. Welcome to Living Villa Capelli. I'm Stephen.
I'm Paul, and we're sitting here with Paul Freeman.
Do I say I'm Paul now?
Yes.
I'm Paul too.
From Australia, if you can't tell from that weird accent that he has.
Hi, everybody.
He's waving. He doesn't realize this is a visual,
well,
not a visual medium.
Well, I was speaking as well.
And we're recording for the first time outdoors in our courtyard. I should describe it a little bit to you. And actually, it's the first time we're recording in front of a live audience. My aunt Maria from Boston.
Yay.
Hey, Maria.
So yes, we're in this courtyard, which is quite beautiful. It's a very pleasant now summer evening. It's been very, very hot here. There's a little bit of air circulating, but you know, we're surrounded by huge ancient wine and oil jugs and lots of oleander and grapevines and
cobblestones.
Yes, and the smell of jasmine.
Jasmine, is, pungent jasmine.
Yes. Which, you know, the scent of jasmine is stronger. And 25 cats. The smell of jasmine is stronger in the evening and in the morning.
It's beautiful.
I guess when it's not so hot out. But Paul is an old friend of ours, Paul Freeman. We know him from New York and from Australia when we went there in 2002 for the gay games.
Yes.
And
don't
he's,
tell people
that. Oh, my God. I'm not gay. My boyfriend is. he's a world-famous photographer, especially for the male figure.
Not so much in China.
No.
Oh, yes. Oh. Yeah. Well, that's half the world.
I know, right?
Or Africa. Africa. Africa are very angry about my
You're only half world famous.
Right. Yes, it's very,
Ugandans.
It's very homoerotic,
yes,
as they say.
It's not that kind of Christianity.
So, Paul, this is your second time here at at our house.
No, I'm so lucky.
Well, thank you. But I think, you know, we convinced you to come the first time, and this time you came actually of your own volition.
Juno's having such a good time the first time.
Well, and you've actually been doing some shooting here, right?
I have, and I did the first time too, but as you will recall, both the models that you kindly arranged for me didn't speak English.
Right.
And I found that incredibly difficult. But yes, this time I had a little bit of time to organize it, so I was able to arrange a couple of guys that spoke at least some English.
Right.
As it turned out, not all that much.
See, but Paul thinks it's quite rude of Italians to not speak English, even in their own country.
No. Well, you know, I must say that, though, there was one guy that flew all the way from California.
That's
to
true.
Shoot in Italy. Now, not necessarily just for the shoot. I have to be fair. Like, he was going to Zurich for a conference, but he flew down to Bari purposefully.
I'll have to give his permission. I can give you links to if he wants to.
Yeah.
I won't give his name yet because
his first name is Jake.
He shall remain.
Yeah.
Yes, he shall remain anonymous.
And I'm sure Matteo wouldn't mind if we get links.
No, Matteo's an Italian young man who also came down to the villa from Le Marche. He lives between Ancona and Pescara in a small town called Saint Benedict or something.
Oh, I thought there was something. It was Guatemala.
No, Grottamare is next to him. He lives in a small town called Saint something or other. Yep. Yeah, like most towns around here.
I think his parents live in Grottamare.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that was fantastic of him to come down. He caught the train down as well, so we were bartering a little bit as to whether I'd go up there, and I was like saying, no, I'm in this amazing villa. There's lots of beautiful locations for what I want to shoot.
Well, Paul actually likes it here, from what he told me anyway, because he said he can't find such like run-down, dirty things in Australia.
Not in the actual villa. Although the villa, I always think, and I describe to people that the villa reminds me of the aristocratic home, mansion, or whatever they called it in The Leopard, the wonderful Visconti movie. And you can say that in Italian.
Il Gattopardo, which, by the way, is an amazing movie. And I'm delighted that you say that because... you're not the first to have mentioned that sort of. I mean, the last time I watched the movie, which was probably 10 years ago, I had a very similar feeling. And it's not just about, it's not really that the villa itself looks like it, but it's a lot of it is about like getting here and the surrounding area and the incredible heat that you felt in that movie. Because I don't know if any of you know the movie, starred Burt Lancaster.
Yes,
Burt right?
Lancaster.
And,
speaking beautiful Italian.
Yes, and what's her name? Not Monica Vitti.
Claudia Cardinale.
Claudia Cardinale and Jean Alain Delon or Jean-Paul Belmondo. One of those two. One of those Frenchmen. Anyway.
It's a long time. Wow, these are like some names dropping.
Yeah. But it is. No, it's a beautiful movie. Like all the best Italian movies, it's about 45 minutes too long. Especially the dance
scene.
But
visually stunning.
Yes, visually stunning.
It's just photographed beautifully.
And, but yeah, it does feel like that. It's a southern Italian intense heat, which I was just thinking tonight when we're getting ready to record. Even though we're outside here, I don't hear any cicadas.
Oh, not tonight,
but they,
no.
But they have been this
yeah?
last week.
Are they only out during the day?
During the day, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, during
okay.
the day.
So crickets should be coming out soon.
Yeah.
But we should explain to you, at least like the... I don't know if you did all these pictures like this, but the concept a little bit was like the poor Italian worker of the South was kind of the feel you were going for with it.
Yeah, in line with the theme of what I called roughly the other day blue collar.
Yes.
Just a working type of masculinity, or shooting the male beauty within that kind of environment, and that, yeah. that sort of worker ethic being part of
which
it.
Which is a lot of your work.
Yes, it is, actually. Yeah. So, again, going back to the villa for a second, the decor and everything that reminded me of the leper was the fact that as a place where you accommodate people, it's not try hard in terms of being postmodern and sleek. It's got a lot of charm of the old world that you've purposely done,
mm-hmm.
and that suits my mood with regard to like shooting this stuff as well. Like it's just very rustic and old and worn and very comfortable, but at the same time there's something really exotic about it, and very
well, especially the way especially the way you set up some of the shots. Though, I mean, yeah, we were lucky enough to peek into a couple of shots, but we didn't see any weenies, though. I didn't see any weenies. I think that one of the difficult things that you do so well is that you choose this, or you create this ambience, or ambiance, as they would say in France.
Ambience.
Right, by taking a lot of the old, dilapidated kind of things that we have around here and making that environment so genuine and so interesting to look at and so hard to find anywhere else. But at the same time, you make that person, that man, stand out from that environment, which is so complex, but still it's that person that really comes shining through. It's almost as though your environment gives that person more power.
Yeah, look, I think there's always got to be a story.
Yes.
It's nothing to see, you know, a beautiful figure or male photographed if it's not a story surrounding it. And, yeah, I guess much to your chagrin, sometimes some of the props that I choose are, worn and dirty, and but they're part of this life or this story that you're telling about this fictional person, really.
Well, I actually love that because, obviously... I like collecting those old, worn-out stuff. Otherwise, we wouldn't have them here. But sometimes after a couple of years, I get sick of them and throw them away, or they're too broken, like some of the chairs that we've been throwing away the past few days.
Oh yeah, I didn't
but
get to shoot those ones.
Chairs. That's right. But you can always come back and shoot them.
Yeah, but you're about to throw them out. Aren't
yes, but I'll find other other ugly ones.
Because Paul likes to dumpster dive.
I'm a dumpster diver. I'm a big dumpster diver. As a matter of fact,
but you've got to qualify that with the dumpsters that are here
exactly,
in Italy.
Exactly.
Like,
Italy
not
dumpsters
what you'd find
are not
in a Western country like America. Or
I mean,
Australia.
Literally, this beautiful mirror that's now hanging in our reception of the new space is this
magnificent.
Magnificent.
Actual gold leaf, and it's got to be 3-4 feet across.
Yeah.
And a good 4 to 5 feet tall that came from the top of some kind of credenza, I'm assuming, that must have been mammoth, and it was in the garbage. And one of our construction workers was at the dump and asked the guy if he could take it. He said, yeah, please, take it. There is nothing wrong with this thing. I mean, I'm telling you, it is in perfect condition.
So I scrounge around all of Australia, like looking for stuff like this, and I find it in the outback a long way from home. But you've got like a barrage of it here, just like stashed in this one couple of acres.
So is this roughly one of or your first real, let's say, shoot outside of Australia? Because most of your books are all of your books have been in Australia, right?
Yeah, I've done some shoots previously in, I shouldn't say this, in America, in the desert, outside of Los Angeles, on the way to Vegas. I've done a few shoots there, and in Montreal, but that appeared in books.
Uh-huh.
But, it's not the first. I was going to try and say, but really,
well,
it's my favorite.
No, obviously what we're hoping for is that you someday come out with a book about Italy or Puglia.
It's definitely a point of difference in the direction because... The rustic blue collar rural thing that I've done in Australia and stuff to date has been very marked by.
What was interesting is us trying to translate blue collar from Mattea. It doesn't translate.
Matteo.
I mean,
it's operaio in Italian.
And I guess it's rural blue collar because although I've done urban blue collar,
it's definitely rural blue collar.
I've moved
the
stuff out.
Now, what I was going to ask you, do you find a difference between the few Italian models you've shot with here and your normal besides the language differences, is there a, do you find a difference? Just in attitude or anything, or it just depends?
The eagerness, like the fact that these models came, you know, a long way to shoot is indicative of the fact that they were obviously going to be very on board and happy to be shooting.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say I've had quite that in Australia, because you're normally just taking someone out for the day from their normal life. You're not really interrupting too much, and they're not making them do. Well, that's not true. You do go away with them, but yeah, I think I found them. They've kind of, I wouldn't say researched me, but they know me really well in the sense that they have known over a period of time that they wanted to shoot with me, so they wanted to make it happen.
Yeah.
So that was really gratifying for me. Yeah, and, you know, when they were telling me stories about my own work and stuff when they were hearing things, that was gratifying to
me. We also had a couple here, guests during the week that were from Austria. I told them that... That Paul Freeman, I told her that a renowned photographer was here, and I said, Paul Freeman, and they freaked out. They were like, oh my God, Paul Freeman, he's here? Really?
Oh, they did know me.
Yes.
I thought they were saying that they had didn't have them in Austria. So never
but no, the
them.
Other one that was weird was my friend from college, Andy, came down with his boyfriend who was from Brazil.
He was a few
And he literally, he walked, we, Paul had the books out for some guests to look at. And Raphael was like, went crazy. Was like, what's this book doing here?
Because his best friend is a huge fan of Paul Freeman.
Yeah, and he hadn't even met you at that point. He just saw the book and was like, what's this book doing here?
It's Bondi work.
Yeah, he was like, what's this book? What do you mean? What is it? He goes, this is my friend's favorite book. It's out all the time. Anytime he has a dinner party, he brings it out. So
and what city is that? Rio? No.
He was from a small town down south. Not that small, but I forget the name of the town. But it's sort of in that German Italian area of southern Brazil.
That was a totally small world. Yeah. It was so random. You know,
so of course he had to have his picture taken with Paul to send back to his friend.
With the book.
So what do you say to people? I'm sure people do say to you, like, oh, that's pornography.
Well, I don't say it like that. I don't say that to a face.
Behind his back.
They might ask someone a little insidious, they might do it insidiously by saying, you know, does it bother you that people might wank off to your work? Which, I don't know if people know what that means.
Yes, it would jerk off. Masturbate.
And I used to say, oh, no, it doesn't bother me, but it kind of does, because, you know, my aspiration is to have it's seen as an art form, and to have the full male nude seen as something completely normal and beautiful, you know, in its entirety.
Right.
So when, and you know, there's a sensuality to the shot. So I'm not saying that it's like I'm just having them stand there deadpan.
No, yeah.
But and there is also a sexuality. I mean, you can't.
It
run
means
away from
that someone's not looking at the shots on a certain level. They're looking at it at one level, and you know, I have to accept there's going to be people who do that.
Right.
You know, and it's gratifying to know that there's lots and lots of people who will express to me how they see the levels, and they read it and they kind of enjoy the entirety of the stories and the beauty that they're seeing. And that's definitely, that would be definitely people like South Americans and Europeans that kind of get it, and also lots of Americans, I shouldn't really generalize, but the passion and the sensuality and the stories, you know, are really appreciated by...
You can talk a little bit about the first time you were here. We brought Paul's books out, and to all of our surprise, the women at the party really totally enjoyed the books.
That was a landmark experience for me, because these were young. You guys used to have that Friday nights and Sunday afternoons bar here with the young kids from the town. When I say young kids, I'm talking early 20s and stuff. And even though many of them couldn't speak English, but Paul brought out my books to show them. And like in a town of 20,000 people in Australia, you would get varying reactions to seeing a male nude book, from disgust from male heterosexuals to, you know, giggling and all that kind of thing. And a couple of people would be like, oh, this is lovely. But here it was just like, just pretty universally, lots of questions about structure and the, enjoying the beauty of the shots, but they're also kind of like asking questions, really intelligent photographic questions, like composition and, oh, how did you get the lighting here? So they're looking at the male nude, but they were seeing a piece of art which was...
Well,
especially for a female point of view, was fascinating for us, for you, and I think for me too, because for me. I mean, I don't think you'd find that. You'd be hard-pressed to find a place in America that
Yeah,
that
and Australia, they giggle and like, oh, I don't know. Oh, can't look at that.
Because that's just the culture. And I don't know what the difference is, but I don't know why. Because
well,
it's not
I mean,
much different.
In America, first of all, it's a puritanical country.
Definitely.
Yes. It's a very, let's say, closeted atmosphere, even for men who are homosexual and don't want to admit it, obviously. But I'm wondering if Italians also study art more than the typical other countries. You know, it's what I was telling to one of my friends recently. My aunt Lena, who is my aunt Maria, who's sitting right here with us, her oldest sister, and really not an educated person, right? She finished grammar school, right?
Yeah,
she finished grammar school, which in those days, because she was from, 1911 she was born in?
Yeah.
1911. So in those days, graduating grammar school was an accomplishment.
Yeah.
I mean, graduating high school, it was like you were a doctor. Yeah, you know, nobody. But she knew every single, as far as I knew, every single Italian opera that existed. So, you know, it's like, how do these, I don't want to say uneducated people, because they're not uneducated, but minimally educated people, maybe they are taught some of the finer things in life. Maybe Italy is
the cradle of their culture.
Yeah, well. Maybe Italy is the cradle of art. I mean, people would think France, but you know, let's face it, most of the French art was stolen from the Italians. Then the Renaissance, even though it has a French name, started in Italy, but we gave it a French name. Just like bidet is a French term that doesn't exist in France for the most part.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What do they call them?
They don't have them.
They don't have them?
No.
Oh.
They're dirty people.
But I think there was an Italian journalist here that night, and I asked him, I sort of said, this wouldn't be the reaction that young people of this age would give me in Australia or anywhere that I've been before, especially in a city of this size. And he was just saying, you have to understand, this is our culture. We grow up with all this around us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nothing to us. He said, it's not even erotic. It's sensual, but it's essentially it's art to us.
It's beauty.
So so they're acclimatized very early to, mm-hmm. you know, a full frontal male in a statue or something like that. So they're not going to be all, you know, embarrassed and stupid and puritanical, as you said before, about it. And some of the girls like that were here that night, they were university educated, or they're off to university and stuff, and they were like, and maybe, I mean, I'm still kind of puzzled as to how in a fairly Catholically conservative country, you know, there's this juxtaposition
of this
appreciation for it. Because it's just, and I'm sure someone said to me, I don't know if it was you that mentioned, but that maybe the older generation aren't quite the same. But this younger generation has married the two things together easily, more easily.
Because again, like you said, it is a piece of art. It shouldn't be scandalous. It's what God gave you.
But don't forget, the Catholic Church made it scandalous, even the artwork in all the cities, by putting fig leaves over naked statues.
Yet initially, the commissioners of a lot of that work were Catholic bishops and stuff
like
that.
Yes, of course, because they were gayer than you and I.
So, that's
you are gay, aren't you?
I'm not actually out.
Oh my gosh, world exclusive here, people.
but you know, it's interesting because when I used to be in advertising, early on in my career, when I used to be a somebody, I used to go around the U.S. and actually Brazil and other places, and I would give a lecture called Sex and Advertising. And I noted a big difference even back then between sex in American advertising and sex in European advertising.
Yeah,
In Europe, they treat, especially the woman and I guess the man also, as a beautiful form. To them, it's beautiful. Yes, they want to have sex with it. Yes, they want to do dirty things with it. But it's beauty. It's a beautiful form.
Yeah.
Whereas in the States, it's always something
dirty.
It's worse than dirty. It's just like, you know, frat boy humor. It's a way, I think, of disguising the fact that they really like to see it. So they make a joke of it, or they turn it into something vulgar.
And do you also think that America and like
perhaps Australia is a little bit, all the Anglo countries are a little bit misogynist as well, in the sense that they kind of objectify the female and stuff in that way that they do it. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Europe, you'll see the sensuality and stuff go both ways in their advertising, maybe, like that they will actually.
Yeah, it's.
Women get a chance to kind of like enjoy.
Yes, I mean, you know, the Europeans greatly overdo it. I mean, they would do used car commercials with a naked woman on the hood of the car.
Oh, so they are. They, right. they do
yes.
tend towards the female.
They use it, you know, in a way that really wouldn't be acceptable to Anglo cultures, you know, where everything has to have a woman with big tits or, you know, half naked promoting, you know, anything. You know, of course, lollipops. It's an obvious thing that you would do
that. But also in the States, until recently, it was always women. But to your point, there was never a sexual men.
Diet Coke was such a revolutionary ad, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where, the worker.
Yeah, the worker was cleaning the window.
Look how people loved that.
Construction workers.
People loved that, didn't they? They went,
that went crazy.
Viral, even though there wasn't such a thing in those days.
And it made him famous.
Then they retreated from that. Like, it seems like they didn't really do that again.
Which, of course, brings us to Playgirl.
Yeah.
I mean, Playgirl was very revolutionary. It was a closeted man's dream come true.
Yeah, really.
I think there were more male subscribers to Playgirl than there were women.
Yeah, they said roughly 50-50 there, right?
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And but you know, but that commercial, that Diet Coke commercial was a carryover from Playgirl, basically. I mean,
was it?
Yes, I mean, Burt Reynolds was in Playgirl. We opposed news.
True.
So to have a blue-collar worker, which is much what you do.
Yeah.
Because if you have a blue-collar worker, half-naked or fully naked, and a woman can appreciate it, it takes all the taboo off it. Because, you know, he's the regular guy. And a woman loves to see the regular guy who is possibly her boyfriend or her husband. So it's okay. Because even though you are glorifying it, it's not quite the same thing. It's not pornographic. It's not lewd.
Are you saying it like that? Lowbrow women get to enjoy it.
Yeah. Whereas
not your elite.
Whereas commercials in America where they show women, they usually were rather vulgar.
Yeah.
It's always.
But when they showed the man, it wasn't vulgar at all.
But now you kind of made me think about something with the whole trend now of the dad bod.
The what?
The dad bod.
Do you know that trend?
No.
Dad body.
The daddy bod. I don't know.
Is this a derivation from the bear or something?
Yes.
No, it's basically like
the
women who like a guy who's not super ripped.
Well, that's going to be a reaction, isn't it, to the gym culture as well? That fastidious, ridiculous, manicured body, which I try to steer away from as well, which is why I try to make them look authentically blue collar, shoot them in an authentic story.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from the fact that I love the fact that shooting in that kind of authentic blue-collar environment also makes them look more organic as well and natural.
Yeah.
Because they're doing stuff and they belong in that environment. Whereas you see a lot of shoots of people with their washboard ridiculous... what do they call that? What's that lean? When they get so lean, they call it a starved look. Like they just deny themselves carbs for shredded.
Oh, right.
That look. And they put like a pair of white underpants on them, a lot of photographers, and sit it in a warehouse or in a dirty place. And you go, well, what's that person doing there?
Did they change?
It's so incongruous.
They think
they're being really kind of,
Well, is that? But it probably goes back to what's the original in Greece? Was it Calvin Klein that did the underwear?
Or it might have been Bruce Weber that shot the very first underpants in the Greeky looking one.
Yeah. the Greek famous wasn't that like the first like.
Who did you say it was?
The underwear was Calvin.
Yeah, it was Calvin Klein. Yeah, I think Bruce Weber shot that first one.
Bruce Weber?
And it was probably in Mykonos or something like this
random like it's beautiful white buildings and it was like beautiful, but it was like again, what's he doing in his underwear?
In his defense, I think he was trying to show just a male statue, a statuesque form
among
the ruins.
Okay.
The problem becomes the client.
But it wasn't
because the client then, because if Bruce Weber were to do a shoot the way he has done Abercrombie and Fitch, for example. Abercrombie and Fitch, you know, he is selling clothes by showing men with no clothes on. Basically,
haven't they sold out of their life?
Right. So if he had done a male nude on the island of Mykonos without underwear on and still put Calvin Klein on the bottom of it, it would have made just as much sense.
Wouldn't that have been amazing?
Yeah.
Mind you, even what he did, which was objectifying the male, in a beautiful male in that way, was hugely revolutionary and scandalous.
Especially when they put it in the middle of Times Square.
I don't remember why I became famous.
You know why I became famous? No. Not because the guy was hot. Not because it was a beautiful shot. Not because it was a Mykonos. Not because there was that white background of the Greek Isles. The guy had a scar just above the band of the underwear.
From appendix.
That's what everyone talked about. Because he was imperfect.
But in the history books now, they sort of say this was the beginning of the objectification of the male as well. Yeah. The beginning of equalizing, which never happened, of the objectifying or appreciation of the beautiful male.
Right.
But it was certainly, whatever it was certainly like a huge
change. Who doesn't work for me in male model quasi homoerotic ads? The soccer player.
Yeah, no, he doesn't.
No, me neither.
David Beckham.
He's too something precious about him.
Yeah.
Something forced and a little bit kind of controlled.
Yeah. It's like he shouldn't have those tattoos.
No, he's not a dangerous. Well, that goes for everybody who has tattoos that's not actually a gang member or a.
No, exactly.
That has gang tattoos.
We were talking about this earlier.
Thank God that David Beckham is only in print because when he opens his mouth, those pearls come right out of there.
Oh, that's a little harsh.
Paul and I talked about this earlier in the week, though, about I actually don't mind tattoos, but as a photographer.
I'm aghast at the prevalence of them because for me, I want to style someone. And I keep on saying to people, like,
you can.
If I want to choose as a photographer to style you in a different time period or something, I can't. If you've got a tattoo that says 2011 or 2015 or whatever.
Well, you know what tattoos
are? A bad tattoo.
Pretty much any tattoos, though. I mean, nowadays, I mean, you didn't have tribal tattoos back in even
Do you
the
know
70s.
Where tattoos supposedly came from, at least among Western culture?
Oh, Western culture. Did you copy them from the Tahitians?
No, from what I understand, from what I've been told, and it makes a great story whether it's true or not.
Is it something to do with sailors?
Yes.
Yes, right.
Has to do with sailors.
That makes sense.
Sailors would have a tattoo done on their back of a religious figure, either Jesus or Mary or some saint, so that when they did something wrong on the ship and they were about to be lashed, whipped, the person who was going to give them the lashes would not dare whip the face of Jesus Christ on someone's back.
Really?
How cool would that be if it was true?
Isn't it great?
But I know all the sailors did go to the islands and get them and come back to England with them, like in the 18th century and stuff, when they were out doing all those discovering of countries, inverted commas.
And was it almost like the hoop earring? Was it a rite of passage?
No, supposedly it wasn't. The hoop earring, what Steve was referring to, supposedly only sailors who had circumnavigated the globe and had finally passed the Strait of Magellan were allowed to put a hoop in their ear to symbolize that they had circumnavigated the globe.
Really? Is that true?
Yes, that's true.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't it cool?
Yeah. See the things you learn on living in
Florida. How do we get all that anyway?
I know. We're so educational.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Right. So, what do you have a new book coming out?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've got so many shoots now, like, that I, of course, have.
Yeah.
And I've taken this year, this, what are we at, 2015, I got to the end of my last book, which was my 11th book, which came out in October, called Outback Dusk, and still available.
On Amazon? Okay, good. No, I'll put links
But also because some of your books are not available anymore, right?
No,
they're out of print.
Some have sold out, and then the ones that are out of print now are not going to be reprinted. I have reprinted some in the past, but that's it, except for the current three.
So hold on to them, folks.
Yeah. But, so I just got to the end. I felt like I was repeating myself a little bit and stuff. I needed a creative break and I needed some sort of stimulation, and I hadn't been traveling for a couple of years, so I just thought 2015, I don't care if I do a book or not. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to travel and be in Europe for at least a good couple of months and shoot some different stuff, which I've been able to do here, but still in my flavour, and then get back to Australia, and I'm going to get back with I'm going to get back to Australia and have about 15 shoots to that I haven't even begun to edit.
Wow.
It's going to be a mammoth sort of nightmare in a way, but it's whatever comes out of that, whatever is evolved out of that, is going to be the next book. And it might split into two directions because it might not fit in the disparate themes that I have shot while I'm traveling might not fit into one book. But they do all come under the auspices of, as we mentioned before, Blue Collar.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's...
For those of you who don't know, Paul, you're self-published.
Yes, right? Yes.
Which is,
oh, really?
Yes.
Yes.
So how does that work? What is
self-publishing? So I worked many, many years ago for when I started in photography for an Australian magazine called Black and White, which itself was revolutionary because Australian celebrities, actors, singers, sports people would vie. Well, not vie, but they would. Some of them were very happy to pose naked for with interviews in this very beautiful production magazine, coffee table magazine, if you want to call it that, to make it simple. And I started working with them when I started in photography. I kind of like clamored to get in there. I was like, if I can get a shot published in that, I'd be really happy. And then I ended up starting getting commissions with them.
Yeah.
They were printing in Korea, in South Korea, and I ended up just piggybacking on working for a magazine over a long period of time. You kind of get to know the distribution people and everybody in the staff and stuff gets to know you as a photographer. So I just kind of learned things and got tips from people in the publishing house. And so I just decided to piggyback my first book by going to their distributor in the US and saying, here's my work, what if I did a book like this?
Mm-hmm.
And then got a sort of tentative agreement that they would distribute it. And then I went back and then got quotes from the same printing house in Seoul in Korea that published these magazines,
mm-hmm.
knowing their quality and stuff like that. And then just eventually raised the funds and sort of did my first book that way.
Mm.
So the shipping comes out of Korea.
Now, did you ever visit the actual?
No.
Okay,
crazy, isn't it?
Well,
yeah, no budget for it.
Well, no. I was wondering. Is even if people, I wonder. I guess that for anybody who's looking to self-publish in the U.S., I guess it's probably similar.
For anybody looking
could,
to,
it's all
virtual. To self-publish. To self-publish photography.
No, but with self-publishing, I mean, Vinny's book is self-published.
Yes, but I mean, you don't have to go to South Korea to self-publish.
No, you don't. No, you don't. But it's probably
yeah. But and also, I must say,
photography is probably one of the better cost.
Yes, cost wise, it's great to find printers that will publish nudity, male nudity.
Oh, right. Interesting.
China is I don't know how China's changed for the buck or whatever. They used to be. I used to be told that they wouldn't. That sort of stuff. Korea just seems to be oblivious to it. I mean,
how's the quality though?
Well, sometimes you get the impression, you know, in the past I've got the impression sometimes that the print operators aren't really watching what's going on, whereas they might be watching something that might have been female nude coming through the print press, because sometimes, you know, the ink and the color changes slightly in a print run.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've gotten better over the years, so I'm much less stressed about it. And, you know, of course, any sensible person would go over and watch the print press themselves.
No, but that's.
It was difficult. Several thousand dollars to do that from Sydney and stuff, so I didn't ever do it. But luckily I sort of stumbled through and got pretty good results from them. I mean, as a photographer, you're pretty kind of like, you want to be perfectionistic about it. Yeah. So I used to get a book back and say, oh my God, this is so magenta, look at the magenta. And I'd show other people and stuff, and they thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
So I like this, what are you talking about? This is good, oh, that's a great photo. But, you know, you get so close to it as a self-publisher because the buck stops with you in every point of it, and therefore you're stressed about every point of it, and the money's yours going into the printing and the shipping. Right. It's not some publisher that you're just going to take your 10% from.
Right. But I mean, there is an awful lot of work that you have to do to prepare the photos to go to print
ready. Oh, my God, yes. And thank God for digital printing, though, because... Prior to that, there was color separations and stuff like that. I mean, it was a nightmare. So I jumped in at the right time where everything was becoming digital.
Sure. Yeah.
So this printing company, Samwa Printing in Seoul, were first up with getting fully digitized printing presses and stuff. So you could actually just send them PDF files and they'd send back proofs. And but, you know, who knows where printing's going to, because that's the other stress I face is that, you know, who's buying books and who's going to keep buying these books?
Right.
Yeah.
I just say to everybody, buy an art book.
I will say...
And not just cooking books.
If I was to buy a book, it would probably be more of a coffee table book nowadays. Something I would... Because I can appreciate that more than the print now. I just... Everything's on my Kindle.
I'm old fashioned that way though. I mean, first of all, I love coffee table books.
We all are.
Although I have a Kindle, I hardly ever use it anymore. I like having a book in my hand to read. One of the things I miss about not living in the States anymore is the New York Times every morning, if not at least, I mean at least every Sunday, having that newspaper, you know.
Physically in your hand.
Yeah, which I think now must cost like $10 probably.
Yeah, exactly.
It used to be $1.50, I think.
Yeah.
But there is something wonderful. And it is also part of interior decorating and decor to have beautiful books, you know, in your home. As much as even in the past, you know, the richest people had libraries. Nobody had libraries. You know, having books at your disposal just made you seem like a richer person, not just financially, but even culturally.
Yeah, so listen, all you interior designers, you minimalists out there, books are really like an essential to proper intelligent decor.
It's black and white. It's mostly black and white and sepia anyway, so it's minimal.
No, there's a lot of color.
But also,
many color images.
I love books.
The other thing too about, you know, I think that what people would miss if they're just seeing, if they're pirating a few images here and there on the internet and just being satisfied with that, is that you're putting together an essay and a collection, and it has a flow to it. So, you know, that's the other beauty of holding something in your hand that's got a, you know, there's been some construction to it. Mm-hmm. So it's not just each individual page. It's like the sum total, which is, you know, you think and you toil over.
In French, it's called an oeuvre.
Oeuvre. It's an oeuvre. And it takes,
which is different than
oeuvre.
Which would be an egg.
But that's what you kind of like pain over a lot when you're self-publishing. Like, I will get up in the morning, like I'll have nightmares about I'm gonna flip an image and I'm going to change, I've got to change that image from page 84 to page 107. It's wrong where it is. It's not working properly, the flow. Right. And so that, like, people, I hope, would appreciate that more in a book form than in like some digital kind of like scan through or something of the book.
No, definitely.
But there is something, there is something beautiful about having books in your home that people like to pick up and leaf through and look at. And I mean, this, to me, it's incomparable. It's the same reason why, you know, you have paintings on your wall.
Yeah.
One of the things I can't wrap my head around is these electronic digital frames, where it'll change the picture for you every so many seconds, and there's a picture that comes up in it.
That's like, your time up.
Exactly. It's like, oh my God.
Move on.
Right. Who created this? Andy Warhol?
You know what? Honestly, those, from my slight understanding, because it was a big fad like one Christmas, but they never really caught on. And maybe that's why. It's just like it feels very.
There were probably more of them around than you know.
The quality wasn't very good back then. And it just wasn't as. It never caught on.
People have said to me, though, that I'm going to have to make my books even more luxurious and more substantial in the sense that when people do buy them, they're actually buying a piece of art, like in itself. Well, and a decor item, not just a book.
It's like someone just gave me a bottle of wine for my birthday, which was a few days ago. Thank you. Happy birthday to me. What a lot of vintners are doing now is putting their wine in extremely thick, heavy bottles. So when you pick up that bottle, it feels like the wine is corpulent. Oh my God, this must be an important wine because
it's
so heavy.
Drink this. This is going to sit on the shelf. Yeah.
So same thing with the book, you know, like we have that book upstairs, Century, which I think.
Oh yes,
I saw that. But people love that book. How many times you've seen it open when I go up there to clean? I'm like, people actually sat down and went through this book. It's a beautiful book.
Yes, but I think you have to have that book if you're going to do interior design.
Is that Taschen that put that out?
I'm not sure if it's Taschen.
It's amazing. Like some of the big publishing houses can afford to put out quite substantial books at a fairly reasonable price.
One of the things that I am sort of regretting now is that. Before leaving New York, I sold my entire collection of photography books. Some of them were spectacular. A lot of, you know, very limited edition, out of print Bruce Weber books.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. I got rid of them all.
Bear Pond probably was
one. Yes, Bear Pond was one of them. I had two copies of it.
That was one of my like hugest kind of influences.
We did have two though. We did have two.
I might still have a copy of Bear
Pond. Had two?
We may have taken one. We may have taken one with us.
Yeah, we just.
Was it just the shipping of the huge weight?
Yeah.
No, but it was also that thing of, you know, every once in a while you have to like clear stuff out. You know, you just have to like unencumber yourself.
Yeah, well, see, that's another problem with, I guess, the continuation of people buying books is that a lot of people travel light now and they kind of move apartments and they just don't want to be lumbered with books. And that's, this is what they tell me.
Right. Well,
they say, please put out a digital book.
Because in the old days, whenever they were, people didn't move.
Yesteryear?
People didn't move. But now people
that's
move
true.
All the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone's become more mobile and you don't want to be carrying all this shit around.
No, I've stayed in the same apartment for more than 20 years and people are aghast.
Yeah,
every time I ask me, they get very stressed. Like, have you still not moved? As if it's like a right, it's the way you grow. And I mean, I guess change is good and people keep on reiterating that to me.
Whereas here in Italy, especially in southern
Italy,
people can't understand. Why do Americans move so often?
Which is why I feel at home here.
Yeah, maybe. When people come here to look for their ancestors, the people in Italy are like, why do they want to know where their great-grandmother was from?
Yeah.
Because they can't understand, how do you not know that your great-grandmother is from the same town you're living in?
Yeah, right.
Because the family hasn't moved in 500 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's even more so there. But I will say some places in America, my parents have been in the same house for 60 years.
Uh-huh.
And so it's... Not some places.
Well, no, but I'm talking about, you know, modern, contemporary people.
I think I like putting that timelessness, actually, you know, I think of it into my work, and which is why it's kind of a bit blue-collary and stuff, but it's also like this is timeless, like it could be in any period. Not necessarily.
Paul, I want you to rest assured I have not sold any of your books.
Oh, God.
Yeah, didn't.
We still have all of your books.
You gave them away.
No, we didn't give them away. Anyway, so where are you going to next?
I'm going back to London, the capital of my culture, tomorrow, and then back the same way I came. I have a little bit of family in the US, so I'm going to fly back via the US to Sydney eventually, via LA, and be back in Sydney to start editing stuff mid-August, I guess.
Cool. And seriously. I'll have pictures, maybe if you, well, I don't know if you'll have time by the time this airs.
I won't have time.
Between, because I would love to have a sneak peek of any of the shots.
Oh,
took.
Yeah.
If not, I can start with the ones you took from.
When is this going to air?
Oh, in a week. Whatever week it is now. Oh, so whatever.
Yeah, no.
If you don't,
we're in the middle of July.
Of course I will. But what are you thinking before this gets uploaded?
Yes.
So what have we got, a week?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's possible in London to do something, but I've got a laptop and you can't do any editing on a laptop. It's a piece of shit in terms of color and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'll have links to all of Paul's books and all that great stuff, and we'll show you some pictures.
Bye.
And I think that covers this.
That covers our episode of Paul Freeman, Naked Bodies, Male Art. Naked Bodies, Art, and... Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. A bug. Let it fall.
And Paul just became a big girl.
If you didn't know he was gay before.
That's not the case, guys. I just was gesticulating and a little bit of a high-pitched thing came out. And thank you. Oh, no, I must say, I have to thank you guys for giving me such another wonderful time here.
No problem.
And also being very accommodating about me just running around with naked men, shooting all over the place, getting in people's way. It's been wonderful.
It was a pleasure for us. It always is, and you're always welcome here.
I'm coming back in
and
about
bring
3 months,
back
actually.
As many naked men as you want.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Buona notte. Thank you, Paul Freeman.
Bye.
Thank you, Maria, my aunt. And thank you, Casey.
Bye.
Bye.